Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for November 30th, 2017. And good grief, many of you, I know many of you listening, are wondering what's going on with my webpage the last number of weeks. Well, I was resituating into a new location, that's all I'm going to say, but I've been so busy I had not had time to get to the webpage and other the weekly tasks that I have. So that's all being updated as we speak here. But I did not know that my sales page was down. The buttons, the only buttons that were available were for the MR59 commercial filters. Those are PayPal. But at any rate, if you did go there, please go follow the link to the sales page, and I think you'll find some improvements. But I apologize, it just, anyway. So if you did go to purchase things, please go back, because I lost, you know, this is terrible, but I lost 2 weeks of sales because I was just assuming for the last 17 years, my page has run consistently and everything, and for the last 2 weeks, it was the page was there, but the buttons were not working to, like when you clicked on something. So if you did go there, please go back and put your order in. And this was right before Thanksgiving. Right now, before the Christmas rush that we should all be, I should be involved in getting everything out. But please, we will work to get all these orders out like right away so you get them by Christmas. So anyway, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. Click on the link to the sales page, and I do apologize. And if you weren't going to order, maybe you should think about going there and ordering some water filter supplies or my books or whatever, because I missed 2 weeks of a sale, and that's not funny at this time of year when critical things are going on. Okay, so as long as I'm talking about that, also big news with the wing generator, and those of you who follow me know what that is. That's the wing generator, electrical generation system. If you are interested in, say you have a farm or a ranch or something like that, then email me. The email address is on my webpage at the top, jmccsci.com. But if you're just listening and you don't have internet, the email address is jmccsci@jmccannyscience.com, and I'll spell that in a minute. But the idea is, if you're interested, just send me an email with, in the subject lines, say wing, that's all you have to say, or wing generator, and we'll get back to you with a survey so that we can check your site out to make sure it has all the proper everything that's required for a good size wing generator. But with what is coming out, this rolling out the commercial models here of the that would be appropriate for a farm or ranch or something like that. So anyway, once again, just email me, jmcc@jmccannyscience.com. That's jmccannn, that's Nancy EY, at science, jmccannyscience.com. So, and that's on the webpage. So do that. And then also the paid cast is there. People have been joining that steadily. And so that's good to see that people are, and for those who have joined, that's all being updated right now. So some people did not get emails. That's all being managed because when I go away, when I'm not available for 2 weeks, like happened now, then of course all the disasters on the planet happen. And so I'll be working diligently to get all of that up to date. Okay, so once again, if you tried to order on my webpage, go back and it'll be operating. So just go there, click on the link on the top of my webpage. A complaint that I have against emergency agencies. Now, they don't plan ahead. That's been a problem. And I don't know how we're going to cure this, because this has been going on for a long, long time. We've recovered in the water filter factory now. You know, all of my stuff now is made in the United States, in our very own factory. The JMCC water filters and the GF water filter elements, all of that made in the United States. But when emergencies happen, the relief agencies come in and try and clear the shelves. And it's really not a good deal, because, you know, we're trying to get orders out. It's right before Christmas. But the problem is with them, because they don't stock anything up. And if you're a relief agency, you would think that, well, by goodness, you should have a warehouse with stuff loaded in it, so when an emergency happens, you can get those things like water filters or blankets or whatever else, flashlights, out to the public right away. Not a month later, not 2 months later, but right away. Because emergency situations are going to happen. And that's why there are relief agencies. But they sit there and they must be playing golf or drinking coffee, I don't know what, but they're not planning ahead. They're not storing up emergency goods for emergencies. So anyway, that's a complaint. If you know anybody who's in charge of emergency agencies, and by the way, if you hear some background kind of rustling noise, it's raining where I'm at right now. So a little bit of noise here, a little rain noise. We have two active volcanoes right now in the world that are threatening, that are potentially going to cause life-threatening situations, which results in evacuations. One of them is a Mount Agung in Bali, and they are actively evacuating people in Bali. Also in Iceland, I cannot pronounce the name of that volcano, but the last time it erupted was in 1728. But a major eruption in Iceland is going to affect all of Europe, the British Isles, Ireland, depending on which way the wind is blowing. They're talking about helicopters, a special type of helicopter that they're using to go in to evacuate the people, because it's not susceptible to dust and shutting down the engine because of the dust in the air. But anyway, we live on a planet that is still very active. And if the planet had formed and evolved, as standard science would have you believe, over billions of years, we would not have active surface volcanoes or earthquakes or plate movements the type we're seeing. None of this would be happening at all. So the fact that we see these very active volcanoes along the rim lines, and of course there are boundaries of what we call plates, but the plate is a big misnomer. The plates, these regions of planet Earth's surface that are divided, are the result of let's take another example. Here's a great example. You take a hard-boiled egg, we've all done this, and you take it and you kind of clunk it around on the countertop. You want to take the shell off of the hard-boiled egg. And so it fractures in a lot of pieces. That's what Earth is like on the surface. And how does it get that way? It doesn't do this all by itself, like standard science would like you to believe. It happens because some major force works on it. And just like the egg, you happen to be the major force that when you wrap it on the table or on the counter, you're an external source. And that's why the eggshell fractures into all these little pieces. But you could imagine Earth is like that egg. And the outer shell is not going to fracture. In fact, if it's solidified over a long period of time very slowly, then the Earth crust and mantle would separate, and we would not have this. There's this idea of subduction, one plate riding down under the other. No, they would be simply separating, and you would find fairly large gaps along the plate boundaries. But that's not what we see. When a plate is pushing down along another plate, that's because that plate was jarred. It was moved because of large celestial forces, gravitational forces from large passing celestial objects, which happen in the solar system actually quite rarely, but that does happen. Tuesday, 2 days ago, there were like 93 what we call fireballs. These are small rocks that come zipping into the atmosphere, and they're large enough to trace all the way down to the surface of the Earth, or very close. And through reverse analysis, we can determine the orbits of these. Now, probably about 80% of them are actually in elongated orbits around Earth, and they finally orbited enough and do other perturbations due to the moon and the sun and possibly Jupiter. They've finally bent around in their orbit enough to where they come into Earth's atmosphere. So 93 in one day. Excuse me, but what about the other 20% that were not in Earth's orbit prior to coming into Earth's atmosphere? Well, these came from afar, and a lot of them came at very high velocity. But what if one of these someday is big? What if one of these someday is planet-sized? But what if it just comes by Earth? Now, these little objects, if they miss on any given day, if 93 are hitting Earth's atmosphere, there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of them whizzing by Earth and not hitting Earth. So the number that hit Earth is very small compared to those that are out in outer space just whizzing by, and maybe some of them will become fireballs. Now, these are called fireballs because they're much smaller than asteroids. Currently, there are a known 1,853, it is said, Earth-threatening asteroids. These are ones that are big enough that could cause a problem. But the ones I want to concentrate on this discussion is the ones that are small, coming into the atmosphere, but coming from beyond. These are objects that have never been in the solar system before, some of them. And so they come whizzing in, and there's Earth. And now Earth is just a speck of dust out in the middle of this vast solar system. But yet it's big enough to where 93 of these small particles come into the atmosphere on a daily basis. Now that's a number that's higher than normal. So many times there's 5 or a dozen or maybe 20. So 90 is a large number compared to the average. But the question is, what if one of those little particles some days, is, instead of being little, it's big enough to cause damage, big enough to punch a big hole in the ground, or big enough to the point where it comes by, but it's planetary sized, and moving at these, the only way you can describe them is ultra velocity particles from outer space. And so anyway, back to the erupting volcanoes. The erupting volcanoes are basically due to Earth being jarred and rocked and rolled, just like the egg, by external celestial sources. No question about that. So once again, standard science cannot explain the basics of why do we have volcanoes? Why do we have frequent earthquakes? And why are there plates that move together? Some of them move together, some of them don't. If the Earth had evolved and cooled from a cooling molten ball, like standard science says, then as the plates cool, there's nothing to make them move sideways, so they would just solidify and grow apart. And as I said, you'd have big gaps between the so-called plates. Another myth is that they're some kind of solid entity. Now, plates, when we think of a plate, you go to the cupboard, you grab a plate, you pull it out, it's stiff, it's solid, you can put a load of food on it and carry it to the table, and the plate has strength of its own on the local basis. But the Earth's surface, to call these plates, is a misnomer. Because I remember in my freshman physics book, it was called Holiday and Resnick, there was a picture of a great crane, and the idea of taking the Earth's crust and mantle and with a great chainsaw cutting out a square the size of maybe half the state of Iowa and trying to pick it up with a crane, and the idea is that this thing would crumble into a million pieces because it does not have strength on that scale like a plate. So that's my point, is that calling these plates is a misnomer. On to a little bit about hurricanes. Isn't it amazing that we had hurricane after hurricane starting in late August in a hurricane season where there had been no hurricanes up to that point? We all of a sudden have a bevy of hurricanes. Is it a bevy or a gaggle of hurricanes? Is there such a term, a school of hurricanes? Maybe I should invent one. A hick of hurricanes, or a hunk of hurricanes, possibly. But anyway, many hurricanes, all of them having landfall and major damage. And then all of a sudden, when all the major damage was done, none. And if it's so-called due to El Nino or La Nina or the whatever in the kitchen sink the standard Hurricane Prediction Center wants to throw at you, don't you think that they should have continued, and don't you think there should have been at least one or two before and after? And to have all the hurricanes performing major damage is statistically impossible. Every hurricane that came this year had major landfall damage. And so anyway, my point is that just observing this from a statistical point of view based on historical record and everything else we know about hurricanes, this was the most manipulated hurricane season I have ever seen. The point is that all of a sudden, after the major damage was done, all of a sudden now we don't have any hurricanes. What the heck? I'm afraid there's a lot of, and I pointed out before that, isn't it ironic that the storm, the hurricane that destroyed Puerto Rico, was named Maria, which is, if you wanted a single-term word name that would typify the Puerto Rican culture, it would be the word Maria. So, anyway, more than strange. Tonight's main science topic, I'm going to be talking about comets to planets. That's been an ongoing theme, but we have a new comet that's in the solar system. It's actually was discovered in 2016, but I'll be talking about something called tail disconnection. It's a phenomenon. But first, I want to talk about one other specific asteroid. There's a thing that came into the solar system, and it wasn't really observed directly, but because of the way the light curve came, in other words, this thing was tumbling, and because of the way the light seemed to imply that this was a long, possibly 1,300 feet long, something like a possibly an aircraft carrier. Something that's like 3 football fields long, long and narrow. So it would be about the size of a modern-day nuclear aircraft carrier tumbling through space. And no explanation, of course, for that. But one of my listeners asked me a question, said, what about, why would this, if it's discharging the solar capacitor, as any asteroid or any object should, why didn't it form a tail? And so, without knowing more details, it's hard to, you know, give an exact answer on that. But the typical situation with an object like this that has come into the solar system and it's the first time it's been here, it's probably moving very fast. So even though it's discharging the solar capacitor, it is moving so fast that the tail material doesn't have time to accumulate. Now, there's another phenomena that's very similar. Is, for example, the planet Jupiter, innermost moon Io, has a torus, and we see this also, I think it's Enceladus, is the moon of Saturn, which also has a torus. In other words, it's material that is in the same orbital path as the moon. And so here's what happens. The standard explanation, which I'll give first, is that somehow particles hit this moon, they go flying off into space and form the torus. Well, that's nice, but why then do not all the moons have a torus? Because they're all subject to the solar wind also. So it doesn't explain, you know, it's a hip pocket explanation to try and explain one case. You know, it's a Band-Aid explanation, but it doesn't tell you really what's going on, and they have not done the proper measurements to show that that's exactly what's going on. What is going on is that these moons are involved in the discharge of the local capacitor of Jupiter and Saturn. They both have ongoing fusion in their atmospheres. And this we saw, this was proven, this is not conjecture, this was proven in the early Pioneer and Voyager days when there was a proton wind measured coming off the surface of Jupiter and of Saturn. So the same proton wind that comes off the sun, the same type of proton wind is coming off Jupiter and Saturn. So these moons are at the right position where they're discharging the capacitor, the fusion-based capacitor, and they basically are forming a tail, but it's very similar to the listener question about this asteroid. What's going on is the tail material is being drawn in behind the moon in its orbit, but the moon is moving so fast because it's the innermost moon, it's moving very fast, and so the particles don't have time to basically fall into it. These are electrical forces, the discharge of that capacitor, and that's the same as my comet work for the solar capacitor. And so it forms a torus. It's filled with particles trying to catch up to the moon, which is moving very quickly, which is electrically charged. And by the way, those are the two moons that have an electrical connection to the North and South Poles. Enceladus on Saturn, Io, the moon Io, the closest moon of Jupiter, to Jupiter. And so the end result is that they don't form a tail per se, but because the tail material is trying to catch up with them, it forms a torus. And so in the case of this long asteroid that's flying through the solar system, there could be or would be a discharge of the solar capacitor, but not enough time. It is moving too quickly to accumulate a tail. The material is drawn in towards it, but it's like a short impulse, and then by then the object is passed and onto the, you know, the next region of space in the solar system. And so it doesn't have time to accumulate a tail because the object is moving so quickly. So anyway, hope that helps explain that little phenomenon. But that brings us up to this comet C2016R2. Now, this comet, the year tells us when it was discovered, and it was discovered by Pan-STARRS, the same search program that discovered the comet that's way beyond Saturn. I've been talking about that on previous programs, talking about how they have misrepresented the diameter of the nucleus of that comet by making bogus measurements and then interpreting them according to a white, fluffy snowball nucleus, which isn't the case. And so listen to the prior week's shows for the discussion on that. But the comet that we're looking at now, C2016R2, has an interesting tail phenomenon, and it's called tail disconnection. Now, we've seen this before, and literally what's going on is the interaction of the solar wind, the comet is trying to form, the tail material is coming in towards the comet nucleus, but then all of a sudden it becomes disrupted. Either the nucleus is moving too fast, or there's solar wind interactions with the tail material, and it takes the material away. But it would seem, on first, basically peel the onion layer back one layer, it would seem that that implies the dirty snowball comet model. But when you look at actually what's going on, the way the tail disconnection happens, you can see the material moving inwards, and then that activity stops. And that, the reason it's the motion in towards the comet nucleus stops is because of solar wind interaction or the discharge of the solar capacitor is not something that's constant. It's always actively changing. And so the electric field could change. There's many, many factors that could cause this comet to, the material in the comet tail, that is, to cease moving towards the nucleus and then it blows away. And so that's exactly what you're seeing. Comet scientists typically make a mistake when they first went to visit a comet, as with Comet Giacobini-Zinner. It was like 1986, I believe. And so what they did is they pointed the sensors towards the comet nucleus, expecting material to be coming at the sensors on the satellite, so they were flying through the tail, the anti-sunward side, the tail of the comet. And they saw not ions, but neutrals. And so then, oh, there's neutrals here. These are unionized atomic species. So what exactly is going on there? Well, as the tail material moves in, it becomes, especially in the smaller comets, it becomes neutralized. They're coming in ionized. They're ions, meaning that they have an excess positive charge. So they're being pulled into the negative comet nucleus, negatively charged comet nucleus, and that process is sustained because of the discharge of the solar capacitor. And so all of this is explained in my books. But what happens is there then is a cloud of electrons basically in the region of the comet nucleus. So when as the ions come in, they become neutralized. There's no longer any force on them. So with the small comets, they get caught up in the solar wind and they go blowing out. So the neutrals, seeing neutrals going away from the comet nucleus, is explained in my plasma discharge comet model. But you can't stop there. There's all kinds of other phenomena. There are X-rays in comets. There are changing magnetic fields in the tail. There are all kinds of other phenomena. There's a redshift that comes from the light that comes off the comet nucleus. There's all kinds of other phenomena that have to be explained. And so the plasma discharge comet model When you look at all of these cometary phenomena, the electromagnetic, the fact that some comets are green, that they're fluorescing like a fluorescent light bulb with carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, has the green lines, and that's why some comets are green, because they have a very active discharge, just like a neon light bulb, but instead of neon, it's carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide. And that's why certain comets are green. And of course, they're fluorescing in green. They're not just colored green. It's not green dust. They're fluorescing in green. In other words, that's a line, that's a spectral line of the species that are being excited by the electron beam that's passing through the region of the comet.
Now, just a short segue here. I know for a fact that there are comet scientists out there who work for the European Space Agency, who work for NASA, Ed Goddard, etc., who listen to my radio show. So they're along with you listening out there now. They know that I'm correct, and they cannot say anything in their research. They know that the heavy hand of, I don't know what you'd call it, traditional science. In fact, there have been people who have admitted in public that the dirty snowball comet model could not possibly be correct, just like in the hurricane world. The head of the Hurricane Prediction Center, the National Hurricane Prediction Center, William Gray, quit, and he said none of the science they're doing there is valid at all. But that agency continues. It continues to get funding. The people keep getting salaries, and they keep having public statements of predictions based on completely bogus science. So my point relative to comets is that there are scientists out there who listen to this show who know exactly what I'm saying, but in their professional life, they can't say anything because they would be ostracized by higher-ups. And they're walking around in a cloud of fear because they would lose their job. They would lose their ability to get funding. Slowly, the peer pressure would build up. And so the truth cannot come out from these scientific agencies. The same, along with this segue a little, I was talking with a professional the other day. He's now retired, but studied chemistry, mathematics, and became a medical surgeon. But he bought my Calculate Primes book and read it, and then read it again, apparently. But anyway, the story is he took it to some people who are, I won't say which agency, these are some of these private mathematical, a lot of the mathematical agencies are private. They're privately funded because they don't get the big money like the sciences do. But in his search for people who would pick up my book, Calculate Primes, and at least look at it, what he found is nobody would even look at it because, I mean, it would be a major revelation, which it is, the fact that prime numbers, the organization of the prime numbers is now understood. And it's very subtle. It's a very subtle issue. Everybody had been looking for some kind of linear structure, and there really wasn't any, and there isn't any linear structure, you know, where one prime number generates the next and that one generates the next. It's not like that at all. It's a much more subtle generation of the prime numbers. And when you understand it, that opens up a whole new door. It's like you're a carpenter. Say you had a carpenter and you have a saw and you have a say a straight line or something, a board that's straight, and you measure with that, but you had no hammer, you had no nails. All of a sudden, somebody comes along with hammer and nails, like it's a brand new tool. you go, gee, this is pretty handy. You know, you just put the board there, put this nail up, pound it in, and the board stays there, and you build a whole house like this. What amazing revelation. And so the formula, the generator function in my book, Calculate Primes, is like that. It's a brand new mathematical tool. It's a new mathematical concept. And it's very subtle, but it opens up the door towards understanding the order of the prime numbers. And it turns out they're a very amazing set of numbers. They have mathematical properties of symmetry, reciprocity, closure, like other very organized mathematical systems. But the clincher is that the people in mathematics refuse to look at it because everything they do depends on the disorganization of the prime numbers. It's so rampant. This is called the professor syndrome, actually. There's a psychological name for this. And psychologists have measured this on professors, that when they hear something that doesn't coincide with what their bank of knowledge, so to speak, then there's a chemical that actually is produced in the brain to block their brain from looking in that direction. And it's called the professor syndrome. It's a psychological syndrome, kind of like, you know, people that like to burn houses down and stuff. You know, it's a psychological syndrome. Not that professors burn houses down, but it's a psychological malady that they cannot look at things that don't fit into their pre-existing so-called knowledge bank, their pre-existing order of the world. It's so devastating. In fact, this is what Velikovsky was talking about when he talked about collective amnesia, that the devastation of the disasters caused by comets on planet Earth, specifically with Velikovsky, it was the Venus event, that it was so horrific that man turned it into like a mythological event, and created mythological characters of the planets, and turned it almost into something fanciful, like a fantasia type of vista of these horrific events, and then collectively forgot about it. And that's what astronomers have done. They have collective amnesia because in their world, disrupting the grand flow of everything is horrific. It's beyond comprehensible. In mathematics, understanding the prime numbers in the fact, too, that it's actually, once you understand it, it's very simple. And these mathematicians have had all of these high-powered mathematical analysis techniques, which none of which get to the heart of the problem, which dance around the outskirts of it for up to infinity. So all I'm saying is that when I'm describing to you how comets work, there are people out there who know, in fact, and listen to this show, and who go back to work every day and don't mention anything because they can't. They understand in their environment they will be washed out, sidelined, and possibly lose their ability, their funding, their career, their ability to publish. All of those things will subtly go away. And they've probably seen this happen to people who came in and had the nerve, the audacity to raise a question against the pompous hierarchy of science or mathematics or geology or whatever the field or organization. So at any rate, back to comets and tail disconnections. Tail disconnections. Now, these have been seen before. Now, if you understand that the material is coming in towards the comet nucleus and something is disrupting the flow of electricity in the electrical current, in the discharge, then all of a sudden the comet nucleus is not charging anymore. Something has disrupted that current flow, and the material that's coming in all of a sudden no longer sees that strong electrical force at the nucleus. And even though they're ionized, they start to float away in the solar wind. They become blown away. So there's opposing forces going on here. But the electrical forces, when the discharge is occurring, the plasma discharge comet model, when the electrical discharge is occurring, it's much more powerful, hundreds, thousands of times more powerful than the solar wind ever thought of being. And a couple weeks ago, I showed a picture of Comet Hale-Bopp taken with what is known as a Swan filter. And the Swan filter filters out light from everything else except ionized hydrogen and oxygen, basically water. And so the streamers of oxygen coming into the comet, and now these pictures were taken repeatedly, so we actually have videos, and these streamers look like a big hose or a snake out in outer space that are whipping around and then combining and then snapping apart. These are vastly electrical connections, and you see what is known as the pinch effect. When they get close enough, they lock together. It's the same phenomena that I talked about during the hurricane season, in which electrical currents sometimes, and we see this on Jupiter with the Great Red Spot and other spots on Jupiter, which are the same as hurricanes. They are electrically driven from the ionosphere of Jupiter. But two of them will get close together and they combine. They kind of snap together. The Great Red Spot and other smaller cyclonic spots. And they connect together. And it's kind of like the Great Red Spot consumes these other spots. Or the small spots sometimes get close enough together and they snap together. That's the pinch effect, where the currents get close enough that they combine. And so the two spots become one. Anyway, you see these same electrical phenomena, whether it's hurricanes, whether it's comets, etc., or planets, when planets align electrically. And I've talked about this, for example, the Jupiter winds. The same situation. Earth has its electrical discharge of the solar capacitor. Jupiter has a very much bigger one. And when these lock together, all of a sudden we get a trans-solar system electrical discharge that we see the effects both on Jupiter and especially on Earth. And so the electron beam that was hitting as part of the electron discharge of Jupiter, Earth becomes entangled in that. It was back in the 1990s, the U.S. military had satellites up, and there was a vast streamer of electrons that came from Jupiter and hit Earth. Now, this is what Velikovsky also was talking about, where the ancients saw a very active solar system, and they saw Jupiter hurling and Mars hurling lightning bolts across the sky between the planets, etc. So the solar system was very active, whereas today, actually, the solar system is very inactive. We, back in the Hale-Bopp days, we had X-class flares, sometimes two or three per hour. Now, we would be lucky to see an X-class flare in a five-year period. The sun is totally out of energy. Very different. On weather, what is it, spaceweather.com, they make a big deal about a G-class flare, which is the lowest. It's almost a powder puff flare. But they make a big deal out of that when there's a G-class flare now. Just look at spaceweather.com. Almost any day they're excited to see a G-class flare, the very lowest level. And back in the Hale-Bopp days, we had X-class flares, which is the highest level, daily on a constant basis. And that's because Hale-Bopp was discharging the solar capacitor. And all of that energy was being dissipated through Hale-Bopp to form that planet. So Hale-Bopp was a planet in formation. It takes a lot of energy. And so what we're suffering from now, the lackadaisical quiescent sun, is a result of the sun's solar capacitor being diminished. And once that's diminished, then the solar activity diminishes, and that's where we are today, a sun that has very little power. And that's why this active hurricane season that we saw this year, with all of these tremendous storms doing all of this damage, that was all man-made, because the sun simply does not have enough energy to produce those storms. The Earth's atmosphere does not have enough energy to produce those storms. And so as I was reporting during the days of the hurricanes this past fall, the news media was out there, ooh, the warm water, it's going to go out over warm water again, and ooh, warm water for hurricanes. They couldn't say it enough times to try and justify the existence of these hurricanes. And then one of them goes up and turns up and goes up to Ireland and Scotland in the North Sea. And 1 week before, the announcement comes out, gee, could hurricanes go to the North Sea and England? That was the, I thought, what is this about? Where on earth is this coming from? But they were prepping the public, and sure enough, one of the hurricanes turned north and waded all the way to Ireland. But nobody said warm water, did they? Why? Because it's bogus. I mean, who would believe that warm water was creating a hurricane off the coast of Ireland? Well, not even a third grader, not even a kindergartner. So the Fox and the CNN news weather reporters were quiet as a church mouse, because they, of course, warm water, you know, there is none. So how did a so-called warm water hurricane get all the way up to Ireland? Well, it didn't. And that was a man-made storm testing out the system to see if they could drag a hurricane all the way up there. So anyway, all of this fits together if you understand how electrical nature of the universe works. And remember, I had put all this together like in 1979. It was the basis for all of this. And of course, I've advanced. Every year I advance, noticing new little innuendos like the shorting out of hurricanes, some of the subtleties of that, how it works, and how they can cause earthquakes. Because the earthquakes, in some cases, not all cases, that it is caused by the electrical current that's driving the hurricane, shorts out to land, and that current goes down through very narrow channels and strikes water and metal deposits in the ground, and can rattle the cage, so to speak, enough to trigger earthquakes. And we've seen this consistently in China, in Japan, in the Pacific Islands, in the South Pacific. We've seen earthquakes commensurate with hurricanes making landfall. So very interesting. But once again, all of this fits together, and standard science has no explanation for any of it. Not any of it. Going back to the gentleman I was talking about, his quest to find people in the math community to look at my Calculate Primes book. And I've already been down that road and realized that mathematics is more closed than some of the scientific fields. But anyway, he was talking about being in a meeting where a guy was talking about the sun and the properties of the sun, who is a specialist. The guy talking was a specialist, and he said, wait a minute, you know, you have the sunspots, which are deep down in the sun, which are cooler than the surface of the sun. Then you have the solar corona, which is millions of degrees, much hotter than the upper surface of the sun. That's backwards. If the core of the sun is the hottest, then those regions of the sun are backwards of what they should be. and the guy giving the talk threw him out. He said he told him he had to leave. Well, you can't ask. You're not allowed to ask. It's not permitted to ask intelligent questions of people in charge of these fields. And all of my work questions standard science. And when you realize it, yeah, standard science is just bogus from one end to the other. And why is that? Well, it's because it's a lot of carryovers from 50 years ago or 100 years ago. Okay, so anyway, back to comets with tails that are disjoint, that are blowing away. Now, how would this happen? You have to imagine. If a comet were a dirty snowball and the tail material were going away, how on earth would this happen? Because you see the tail forming, it's moving in, and all of a sudden it stops and it blows away. And so how on earth would this happen? And if you watch closely, you can see this. I should have posted on my webpage the picture of such a discharge, and I hope the animation carries through, that's saved and is on the webpage there. But you can see a comet, this comet C2016R2, with the disconnected tail, and I'll see if I can get some more pictures of disconnecting comet tails to post on the webpage. And once again, I apologize for the last number of weeks. I was very busy doing some other things, excuse me, and had to totally let my webpage go. And it was at a time which, like I said, was critical because the sales page went down, had some problems. And so when you look at it, you'll see that it's been upgraded and has a little bit new look to it. But back to the idea of comets and disconnected planets and posting pictures, hopefully I'll have quite a few pictures of disconnecting tails so that you get the idea here. And so if a comet is producing material from the nucleus, as they suggest in the dirty snowball comet model, then that material would go out and the disconnection would not occur out in outer space someplace away from the nucleus. It would start at the comet nucleus itself, because it might be an episode, according to their explanation, that the comet is not outgassing or whatever. So the disconnecting tail should not occur out in outer space someplace. It should occur right at the nucleus, and you should see a gap in the tail starting from the nucleus, but that's not what happens. It happens out in the tail, which is proof, once again, a subtle proof, that it's not the dirty snowball comet model. It's the plasma discharge comet model with the material in the tail coming in. There's an event that short circuits or slows down the charging process of the nucleus. It's not as highly charged for a period of time, or it's variable, and so the material coming in doesn't see that strong force and it blows away in the solar wind. So that's the true explanation. Anyway, think about it. If the dirty snowball comet model were the cause of this, the disconnecting tail would start right at the nucleus, not out far in outer space someplace. So anyway, that's a good discussion, a well-rounded discussion, including areas like hurricanes, earthquakes, and other electrical phenomenon that do the same type of thing, the combining of currents. And that's a good example too, is when the hurricanes make landfall, the multiple currents coming in from the various parts of the leading edge of the hurricane combine as they go down into the ground. They don't filter through the ground in a broad region. They find very, very narrow paths to cross and penetrate down into the ground, where they then can find a region which would trigger an earthquake. Okay, so I hope that makes sense. These are very subtle concepts, and I know the public out there that follow my work will understand these. So just a quick update as we head into this, the final weeks of the Christmas season. We're ready. Everything we have in terms of products are on the shelves. We have passed the critical time of supplying relief agencies for the hurricane victims, etc. So the factory is back to normal, and we're ready to ship. And so anyway, like I said before, I lost 2 weeks of sales because my webpage was down. I was very busy occupied with some other things, did not notice it. So if you do have an inkling to purchase water filter products, or if you went there and could not because the order buttons were there, you're going to find it's a little bit different order. It's a little bit easier to use now. But please make some orders so that I can make up lost time here. But remember that the 10% sale and the extra 5% sale are still on, so that's a really good deal. That'll run up through the next number of weeks, and please order early. If you order now, we still have time to get the orders out by Christmas. And once again, if you make an order you want it shipped to various locations, then use the email address that you get when you make the order, and we will make every effort to ship your goods to the various locations. So just make one large order, and if you want it shipped to two or three different places, we can figure that out. And just email me, and we'll figure that out and get the shipping correct. So at any rate, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and remember there's three things there at the top. There's the sales page for the water filters, my books, etc. Then there's the paid cast, which is the weekly extra hour deep dive into scientific topics, $3.95 a month, and you can buy my book libraries, my ebook library, etc., as upsales from that. And those are at half price, so that's a good deal. You can also send those to somebody else. So there again, just email us, and we will accommodate that if you want to send that as a present. And then also the wing generator. So the wing generator is reaching commercialization for farms and ranches. So email that address. It's at the top of the page, jmcc@jmccanniescience.com. And we will send you a questionnaire and get information to verify that your site is a good site. And so just email, just say wing in the subject title. We'll send you the questionnaire and get back to you. So the top of the webpage, jmccsci.com. Go there, and we'll be doing a lot of updating in the next day. A lot of it has already been updated. So go there and help support what I'm doing here. I'm trying to move up into very important regions, energy, water, etc. So this is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.